The Replacements released their first album in 1981. They broke up in 1991, but their devoted fans still remember them as one of the last great rock bands of the 20th century.
And thank you for all Replacements fans for doing this, man.
Thank you.
It's long overdue and greatly appreciated.
In Memphis last week, author Bob Mayer signed copies of his new biography, Trouble Boys, The True Story of the Replacements. It's aptly titled. The Replacements were known for their often brilliant music, but also for the way they thumbed their noses at the music business. They didn't want to make videos to promote their songs, and given a coveted slot on Saturday Night Live in 1986, they responded with a drunken, profane performance that made them toxic for television. Later that year, the Replacements came to Arden Studios in Memphis to try to regroup. And last week, Here and Now's Alex Ashlock went there as well to meet up with Bob Mayer.
The Replacements came here on Election Day, November 1986, really to try and do a trial session of sorts. When the band came here, they were at somewhat at loose ends. They had just parted with their longtime manager, Peter Jesperson. They had just fired their co-founder and lead guitarist, Bob Stinson. And they really were on the verge of breaking up, in a sense, but decided to try and make another record, their second major label album. And so they came here to Ardent in Memphis to work with a producer named Jim Dickinson, who had a pretty fascinating pedigree, had played with the Rolling Stones, had produced the cult band Big Star, which the Replacements loved, had worked with Ry Cooder, and really been one of the key figures in the Memphis music scene from the 60s all the way until his death, really, just a few years ago.
Tell me a little bit more, maybe take me around this studio, because I know there's some special things about this particular studio where they recorded Pleased to Meet Me.
Paul Westerberg spent most of the session enclosed in what they began calling the dungeon, which is actually just a sound lock in between the studio and another part of the building. And as you can see, it's basically just a, you know, very small concrete surrounded closet, you know, just... And they set up a mattress, and this is where Paul cut his vocals, recorded his rhythm guitar. In fact, there was some historical precedent for using this. This wasn't always used, but Alex Chilton, who was a great hero of Paul's, of Big Star and the Box Tops fame, he had recorded some of Big Star's moodier vocals in here. So there was an attraction there, but I think also it allowed Paul to be very close to the rest of the band, but sort of isolated in his own, as we say, dungeon environment.
So how did they get here? Tell me more about where they were from, Minneapolis, their family background. They all came from kind of troubled background, troubled families. Tell me a little bit about the biography of the members of the Replacements.
Well, the story of the Replacements really is about the merger of the Stinsons, Bob and Tommy Stinson, and Paul Westerberg. Bob Stinson had grown up, the band were all basically Minneapolis natives or had roots in central Minnesota, and Bob had grown up rough, had a very troubled upbringing, was basically abused as a child. The family moved around quite a bit. His half-brother Tommy came along about 7 years after he did, and Bob, they kicked around San Diego and Florida for a number of years before returning to Minneapolis. Upon returning to Minneapolis, the sort of traumas of Bob's childhood caught up with him, and he ended up getting in trouble with the law and being basically sent into the state juvenile system. And so there was a period of years where He was sort of off on his own. And the way he reconnected with the world and sort of got through the traumas he had experienced as a kid was through music, through playing guitar obsessively and fanatically. And when he got out of the state system, what he wanted to do was start a band. He happened to see his younger brother, Tommy, going down somewhat a similar road to him in terms of getting in trouble and shoplifting and petty theft en route to more major crimes, and basically thrust the bass in his hands and said, "You're going to play bass, and you're going to play bass in my band." Soon after that, they hooked up with another neighborhood kid named Chris Morris, who was their drummer. And they were playing along as a group called Dog Breath for a few years until they hooked up with Paul Westerberg. Paul Westerberg was another kid from Minneapolis, high school dropout. They were all high school dropouts, and Paul was a guitarist wishing to be a singer-songwriter fronting a band, and he had dropped out of high school and was sort of looking for this opportunity. What he was looking for was desperation, as he put it, and he found it in the desperation of the Stinson Brothers and Chris Mars, and together they formed a group in December of 1979, first known as The Impediments, then became The Replacements.
The title of your book is Trouble Boys, and it really speaks to the moment when the band became The Replacements. Tell me about that.
It was a point early on when Paul came to the band after first meeting them. He brought several records over and said, "We should sound like this." Among these albums were records by the New York Dolls, the Heartbreakers, and also tracks on Wax 4 by British roots rocker Dave Edmunds. And one of the songs on there was Trouble Boys. It happened that they had been rehearsing for a period of weeks with some other members floating in and out, and eventually it was just down to the four of them, Paul, Tommy, Chris, and Bob, and they were rehearsing this song, and somewhere in rehearsing this song, they found their sound and their identity. So I thought, as a title, Trouble Boys worked on that level as a flashpoint moment, but also it speaks to The Replacements' nature going forward, in that they were trouble for producers, managers, record labels, sometimes for their own fans and even themselves. So it had a kind of multi-layered meaning. The Trouble Boys came in. I guess they'd been out fighting and raving. They were, I think, to a man, complex and contradictory people, both in terms of their desires, what they wanted, as opposed to what they were capable of. They were prideful people, and yet they tried to portray themselves as these lovable losers, but they weren't losers. You know, in their hearts they felt like winners, but there was a sense of not wanting to say that out loud, and so there was this constant conflict between great insecurity and self-doubt and great ego that was almost roiling constantly in the history of the band, certainly when it came to their career. How do you say okay to an answering machine? How do you say goodnight to an answering machine? And I think so much of that was mined in the music and the songs, particularly in Paul's writing, where you get so much of him emotionally and so much of the band spiritually in those songs. They touched people in a way, and Paul's songs touch people in a way that very few writers do, you know, in the head, in the heart, and the gut. There was no artifice to what they did. And so I think as an American rock and roll band playing this music and living out this life, they're worth remembering.
Bob Mayer's new biography is Trouble Boys, The True Story of The Replacements. He spoke to Here Now's Alex Ashlock in Memphis. Well, a person can work up a mean thirst after a hard day of nothing much at all. And you're listening to Here and Now.